Welcome back to another edition of In the Garden. It's already midsummer. How does your garden grow? I'm Kelly Casey, and I'm so glad to welcome you back to In the Garden. Now this week, I have some updates, some previews of coming program topics, and I'll also take note of some of the bounty at this midsummer time. So far, where I am, just north of Hastings, Minnesota, there have not been any damaging winds or hail, but from the online posts of others, mainly to our north, they've not been so fortunate. And if you, where you are, have experienced weather that has set you back, I'm truly sorry. That's the thing about the fragility of nature. We wait and wait for a chance to grow things. Then we just have to hope for the best. I know the fields near me are growing. I even did the knee-high by the 4th of July trick with the local cornfield. And due to the stretch of heat, high 90s in late July, the corn was nearly up to my neck. I hope the farmers out there are looking at those crops and projecting a good harvest. Lately, I've been busy finding containers to divide up a long overdue area of hosta. They really are overgrown, and so far, I have about 42 divisions that will be placed in the shady nursery area that I have down by the barn that will toughen them up hopefully before the end of the growing season. Now, although some gardeners only divide in the spring, I've always waited until about midsummer, and that way I have a good sized plant to divide into two or even more of the smaller ones. Then I lightly fertilize and set them under the evergreens in the shade until it's time to gather them for winter protection. There are so many kinds, the big ones and the small ones and the different hues and the greens and the whites and the yellows and the grayish blue ones. I can see why people love them. I really have good luck with them. Now, while we're on the subject of the great outdoors, I had an encounter that maybe some of my listeners might find surprising. My loyal cat, you might be able to even hear him in the background as I'm recording this, his name is Rambo, and he's a constant companion as I go about the duties of outside our small hobby farm. He shows up to oversee my early morning weeding, or Japanese beetle extraction. Then he promptly flops over for a tummy tickle, or maybe a stop in the catmint that sprouts in several beds. He is an excellent mouser and has even gifted us with two of those voracious moles which have turned our yard into a bumpy maze. So he's a really good cat. But anyway, the other thing he likes to do is to walk down to the barn with me in the evening, wait for me to feed and water our resident donkey trio. Yes, we have three donkeys. Don't ask, it's a really long story. But then he waits for me to pick him up for the trek back up the hill. One evening, just recently, I was a little later than usual. In fact, it was really dark. So I hurried down there to quiet the insistent braying of the hungry burros. After watering and cleaning, I snapped off the light and looked around for the cat. Nowhere to be found. So I headed carefully up the small hill in the dark to the house. About halfway up, I see him near the tree line. So I started over there to pick him up. This is where the surprise comes in. As I was about 10 feet away from him, ready to scoop him up, my eyes reminded my brain that Rambo isn't white, he's brown. And thus I came very close to picking up a possum who was out for her nightly rounds. She froze, for which I'm very glad, and it gave me enough time to back away with a quiet apology and a nervous chuckle. Wildlife can really catch you off guard sometimes. This summer, I've also been enjoying the fragrant aromas of my bush roses that are doing their best against a massive amount of heat and an onslaught of Japanese beetles. Those wicked pests arrived in my garden in mid-July, and they continue to chomp on morning glories, rose leaves, dahlias, and almost anything nearby. The practice of dropping them in a soapy water bucket is satisfying, but it's also very time-consuming. I like to find them in midday and remove as many as possible. The main thing also is to get rid of the chewed leaves as it has remains of the scents, which may attract more of them. Also, don't crush them. Make sure you get rid of them because, once again, that will release the pheromone that attracts more to your garden. Also, an observation about the rest of the winged creatures that are in the garden this summer. Lots of dragonflies, mason bees, and even a few of the big old bumblebees. Also, the loud croaking of the tree frogs let me know that they, too, are around. They hide in the smallest of crevices and emit a huge sound that really belies their tiny size. I even sometimes catch them in the middle of the night clinging on to the kitchen window. They're so cute. Other summer duties have included keeping ahead of the many volunteer Grandpa Ott Morning Glory seeds that have seemed to be sprouted everywhere. And I may have visited a garden center or two or three, especially at the end of the season when the sales were just too good to pass up. On a challenging note, however, I must report that a frequent neighborhood visitor has been greedily sampling those early summer roses that I mentioned before, and that visitor is officially known as Bucky, as he's a young buck who has made his home in the field near our home. We have a rural property, and while it's neat to see a brood of wild turkeys underneath the bird feeder or the occasional possum or raccoon family wandering near the tree line, the appetite of a growing buck is not to be discounted. As many of you know, tender hosta leaves are favorite snacks, as are petunias, phlox, and geraniums. You might think, however, that the thorns on raspberry bushes and roses would be some protection. Well, I've been proven wrong. Although there are several preventative sprays and granules, such as Deer Stop and Liquid Fence, the size of our yard would need a delivery in a 55-gallon drum, so I've come to the realization that some of my crop will just be Bucky's snacks, as long as he doesn't start to spread the word to his buddies. I'd like to mention that I will be attending the Dakota County Fair in August, and I hope to be able to connect with some of the people who are tasked with deciding which flowers and veggies will be awarded the top prizes this year. That fair is one of my favorites, as is the Minnesota State Fair, which I will also do a show from later in the month. Those programs will be a live commentary as I circle the entries and stop to chat with folks in the building that are filled with all kinds of inspiration. I've only entered a couple of specimens in fairs, and I'm always interested in the premium examples of horticulture and agriculture that are put on display for us to see. Also coming up on future shows will be our How Does Your Garden Grow contest, where I will be taking photos from local gardens and asking our listeners to vote for their favorites by checking in on the Facebook page. That contest will run August 22nd through the 29th, with winners featured on our August 31st program. I'm always looking at beautiful yards and gardens, and I love to highlight some of the nicest. Speaking of the Facebook page, you can find photos and links from past programs at the In the Garden with Kelly and Char at Facebook. Feel free to view some of the faces that belong to the voices that you've heard each Wednesday here on the radio. For the rest of this week's show, I'm going to concentrate on the many things you can coordinate the look of your landscape, patio, and gardens. If there's one thing I miss during the long, white, and chilly off-season, otherwise known as winter, it's the wonderful colors that are found in all types of outdoor specimens. As I've mentioned before, my mom is a dedicated and talented gardener, and she has nearly an acre of gardens that are all divided into color-themed rooms. Some of the themes are patriotic with red, white, and blue, and there's pink and purple and white and green and a peach area and light yellows. Well, just the colors of the rainbow. Now, depending on the color of your home or maybe other nearby buildings, you may have a preference for similar colors that complement these, or maybe you just love all the different bright variations that are offered with the never-ending selection of annuals such as zinnias, impatiens, and other festive finds. I'm sure the color I miss most each winter is green. There's nothing better than seeing that early spring grass turn from light green to vibrant green, and then watching the trees develop those baby leaves, and before you know it, the world is reborn. Now, longtime listeners will know that I'm a huge fan of hostas, and there's such a wide variety of greens and whites and creams and yellows, ranging from deep to subtle shades that are very versatile in planting. You know, not every color needs to come from something blooming, but if you're looking for a way to green up your surroundings, you might like to concentrate on an assortment of green shrubs, plants, and green blooming plants. Many perennials are quick to green up, and those that also bloom are limelight hydrangeas, viridiflora tulips, which are surprisingly light green, and the wonderful bells of Ireland. Those, however, are not hardy in our zone 4. They can, however, be added to your summer patio pots for a green pop that season. Some like the cool, crisp look of greens and creams or whites, which are easy to find in variegated specimens of hostas and other perennial plants. For shady areas, those variegated varieties will thrive and provide several years of nearly maintenance-free enjoyment. Some types of coleus, such as green lantern and color blaze lime, are also green, and they grow rapidly in the warm summer sun. The combination of whites and greens are some of my favorite, found in beautiful bridal wreath spirea, white honeysuckle, bleeding heart, snowball viburnum, and Annabelle hydrangea bushes. Our church has some of these giant globes. They get so heavy, by midsummer they're dipped low to the ground after developing to nearly the size of a bowling ball. With any flowering specimen, regular fertilizing is necessary to have success with these traditional choices, and be sure to check the zone, sunlight requirements, and watering needs as you put together your list for long-term plants. If you're using containers, however, some other varieties may be worth using if you only expect one season of growth. Check out unique white clematis, white marigolds, moonflowers, and geraniums, which can even be planted among vines that produce white-skinned pumpkins and gourds for late summer color. Let's move on to some of the other wonderful colors, including my favorite, orange. Now, tops on the orange list for me are deep orange maverick geraniums that are good choices for planters and walkways and window boxes. And a number of bloomers in orange also include begonias, impatiens, roses, and daylilies. I do admit to having lots of what some call ditch lilies, those graceful orange waving shoots that are prevalent in roadside ditches. They also spread quickly and among the first to emerge in the spring, but they're so easy to divide, and they do well in containers or in direct in soil, wintering over with very little care. They do multiply through tubers and generally last only into the early summer before they die back to gain strength for the next spring. Daylilies of all hues can be found in nearly every garden center. Today on In the Garden, we're talking about developing and defining your color palette for the blooms and foliage that can really set off your landscape. Now, I know everyone has color favorites, and some of the other most popular are the reds and pinks. From the beauty of a deep red rose to the rosy pink of impatiens and geraniums, mandevilla, 4 o'clocks, nasturtiums, zinnias, and tulips. But you need to consider the timing of those blooms. Some, like the tulips, are welcome first bloomers but fade away first as well. So be ready to have some annuals to fill in to keep the color going or allow the greenery to take over again. One thing I always do is have an area that serves as a nursery of sorts, maybe nurturing some small seedling transplants that will be moved into place as others fade. With some timing, you can keep your landscaping going strong. One tip I take from the greenhouses, that's to plant some and save some back. Or pinch back some of those leggy impatiens and those flowering petunias or geranium baskets to allow the plant to gather energy and send out a few more blossoms a little later. Garden centers typically hold back some of the plants, perhaps in containers that can be then brought out into full sunlight to fill in with reinforcements midway through the summer. Use those replacement plants that are bloomed early, or maybe they're resting in the hot summer sun between blossoms. Now's the time to give trailing bloomers that summer haircut. Although it might seem counterintuitive, cutting those leggy petunias or geraniums back will bring yet another bloom spurt that will look great at summer's end. As we move around the color wheel, I also see posts online asking if there's really a blue rose or a blue sunflower. Often the photos of such flowers have been photoshopped to make them appear more naturally blue. It sure gets a lot of attention, but unfortunately, it's just someone's imagination. What is not bogus, though, is the soft or bright blues found in Dutch iris, blue boy phlox, monk's hood, agapanthus, morning glory, or popular plants such as blue spike speedwell, blue ensign lungwort, and blue jean Russian sage. You can pair the old favorite bachelor buttons, too, with some bright yellow sunflowers, and that'll make a striking planter that combines tradition with current flavors. Or maybe blue columbine or delphinium with white daisies or phlox. Now, the next in line is purple. From the tall, stately liatris to the sweet-smelling deep purple of heliotrope, purples and lilacs are beautiful wherever they are grown. Salvia, one of my favorites, come in several shades, including purple, and those are so long-lasting and slow to fade. Bellflower, lupin, and black pearl astilbe are popular additions to gardens that strive to highlight this royal color. And don't forget colorful foliage when you're considering the plants that you select. Some of the best colors come in all forms of coleus. It's such a versatile plant that can easily be curated to form impressive backdrops. You can feature them along walkways and highlight other solid color blooms in containers of all sizes. Another bonus is that coleus are extremely easy to propagate. You can use cuttings to expand your supply as the season goes along. More colorful leaves can be found on croton, dracaenia, and coral bells or heuchera. These can be planted in a range of locations from full sun to heavy shade, and the color and bloom of those showy bell stems are best when the plant receives at least 4 to 6 hours of direct sunlight. Before I close this week, I do want to invite everyone to a midsummer plant sale that will be taking place on the North Lawn at the First Presbyterian Church in Hastings. That's just down the block from KDWA radio station at 6th and Vermilion Street. It'll be held on Friday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and on Saturday 9 to 1. That's July 29th and 30th. The majority of the plants will be hostas, with some assorted elephant ears, Japanese lilacs, traditional lilacs, and an assortment of small perennials. I'm an avid container gardener, as you know, and really need to part with nearly 100 extras that can go into the ground where you garden. I hope you can drop by. Once again, we're out of time, but I'll be back next Wednesday with more tips and topics from my garden, and I'll continue to ask my guests, how does your garden grow? Bye for now. Pulling weeds and picking stones, we are made of dreams and bones. I feel the need to grow my own, 'cause the time is close at hand. Time is close at hand. Rain for